before. Like, I do that, you know, but I hadn't seen this. And at some point he became very calm and he said to my aunt Suzanne, you know, take Joey downstairs. Like, I'm going to, you know, tear this place apart. If I have to, I'm going to find this gun. And it was at that point, you know, and I only know this because I made amends to my aunt and she told me this, you know, I went into my sister's bedroom. I remember doing that. I went under the bed and got the gun. I remember doing that. What I don't remember doing is taking and pointing at him. You see, I love my dad. I don't want to shoot my dad, you know, but what alcoholism takes from me isn't all the stuff like the, you know, the job, the license, never crashed a car with a license. I never had a license, you know. It doesn't take that stuff from me. What it takes is my sanity. You know, what it takes is just my ability to relate to other people. Anyway, I eventually did give it to him. And I found very shortly after that I was given an ultimatum. You know, I could go to a school. I was not told that, you know, it was a wilderness institution in rural Virginia and I was going to be made, you know, a ward down there, give my passport over. And like, I'm there. I they just said school, you know, or I was told because of my mom's work, you know, they turned this gun in and I was told that the police wanted to talk to me, you know, because this is Canada. Like, you can't have a handgun in Canada. And so, you know, for an alcoholic of my type, there's always the third option when given an ultimatum, you know, which is take the money and run. You know, it's take whatever you have, abuse, you know, whoever you got to abuse, take whatever favor, you know, is offered and get the hell out of there. And I was just willing enough to go to the school. And you know, and it was Al's school. And I was told upon arrival there, you know, in Dillon, that I was going to leave. You know, I thought, like, I'll be here for a few months. You know, I'll stop drinking for a few months. I'll get the heat off. You know, I'll re-enroll in high school somehow, because at this point I've flunked out of high school, or I've withdrawn because of failing in high school. Like, I don't know what the, you know, that's just semantics. But I arrived there in Dillon and I was told, you know, I wasn't leaving either by successful termination or in handcuffs on the way to the penitentiary. And that hit home. You know, and I spent a lot of time there. And just like I said at the beginning of this talk, like, I, you know, eventually when I went to meetings, like, I would sit in the meetings and I would like what you had to say. And occasionally one of the stories that you would tell about being in a blackout or the way that you drank or how you hid your garbage or something that you did would remind me of something that I did. And I would just, you know, kind of gasp for a second and get it. And then I would retreat back into self. You know, I was not yet here, you know, with you. I did not yet feel part of, but at least I was there. I was hearing the right things. And I'd go back, you know, to the school, you know, to the school after, and I'd get on my cot and I'd spend most of that night thinking about drinking, you know, and I wouldn't tell anybody this. And eventually, you know, I asked the guy to sponsor me, you know, only a name, of course. And you know, it's like outwardly things were looking good, you know, but inwardly, I had this thought, you know, and I don't know when it formed, because, you know, around this time, like, having a few months of sobriety, that's the most sobriety I'd ever had. But the thought looked like this, you know, I can't keep doing what I'm doing. I can't keep drug dealing. I can't keep stealing. I can't keep, you know, flunking out of schools and losing jobs, but I need to get a little job and I need to drink every day. Like, that was the most persistent thought in my head. My dad, you know, the non-alcoholic dad, would go to work and he'd come home and have a rum and coke. And the difference between, you know, him and me is like my whole day is that drink. And so, you know, a sort of year goes by and I was sitting in, you know, and like, this is not to, I know Al is here. So like, I don't, you know, this isn't just a, but Al is here and he was there. And he just happened to be there, you know, as a member of AA. He wasn't there to counsel me or do anything professionally. He just sat in on this particular call with my parents. And before I could even get the credit for telling on myself, you know, Al said, and you want to drink again? And you see, that's true, you know, and if you're new, like, that's always going to be true if you're an alcoholic of my type. Like, it's just after a while, my ego rebuilds itself. And I just, like, I know that taking a drink is going to fix the way that I feel inside, that problem that I'm not going to tell anyone about. And so, like, obviously that was upsetting my parents. You know, I had no plans to really finish high school or to do anything. I just wanted to get a little job and drink. Like, that was my kind of best laid plan for life. And, you know, Al took me aside after that. And he said, Joey, you know, you're just going to use everyone in your life to the point where they're going to want to have nothing to do with you. You know, you have your family back in your life now, but that doesn't really mean anything. You're just a dressed up failure. And then, and I hope I never forget that. And then he said, why don't you try AA? You know, and it wasn't like, why don't you just keep going to AA and sit there and not talk to anyone? Cause I'd been doing that. You know, it was like, why don't you try it? And what did that look like while I was still, you know, at the Wilderness Institution trying AA? You know, it meant writing honest letters to that sponsor and actually letting him start the steps with me. You know, it meant when I got out of there, you know, immediately going to meetings in Toronto, joining a group, you know, getting active there, going through the steps with that sponsor. Like I did those things, you know, and all I can say is that it started to work. You know, that thought, my first sponsor always says this. I've only had four sponsors and I've had the same sponsor for 12 years, but I still remember what Ari said. You know, it was something that the third step removed his obsession to drink, you know, was going through the process of the steps. And you know, you've done the third step when you're writing your fourth step. You know, he said that removed his obsession to drink. And I believed him, you know, I sat down and I did a fourth and fifth with him. And, you know, and it took, it was a dead cat inventory. It was on those Joe and Charlie, you know, the sheets with all the checklists, and it was too long. And I spent, you know, there was a dead cat on there. It was embarrassing, you know, it took 2 days to read it all. Like I wrote too much. I over intellectualized it. And, you know, by the end of it, you know, like we all, the second day was just the harms and everything that I had done and where I was at fault. And I just felt like garbage, you know? And I thought, like, everybody, you know, and we shouldn't share this in AA. Like, we should stop sharing that, like, oh, I did my fifth step and I had a profound spiritual experience. If that was not my experience, if that's your experience, like, I, you know, I'm grateful for you, but that was not mine. I finished that inventory and I went to a meeting that night and I was thinking, like, this is what AA has to offer. Like, I'm going to drink, you know? And I guess I, for whatever reason, you know, call it divine intervention. I called my sponsor and he said, you know, we missed some stuff in the book. Like, let's go back through this. And so we sat down and read that and he told me to go, you know, home and be quiet. You know, take the book down from the shelf, even though like it was already in my backpack. Like I took it out, you know, read it, and I did the seven-step prayer. And it was at that point that I got that thing that you guys talked about. You know, that thing of like, now I feel like finally I'm part of this deal. And 15 or 14 years later, like I still am, you know. And what happened after that, and this is what I'm going to try and talk about, you know, is the amends. Now, with that first sponsor, this guy named Ari, you know, we started making them right away, but I was an 18-year-old kid. You know, I had a host of problems in Toronto, and I wasn't going to deal with any of them. I was heading off to university, you know, the following week. And so, you know, I got a new sponsor in Windsor, and he started taking me through some of these amends. And I'll try and talk. I'll probably, you know, I got about 20, 25 minutes. I'll get at least through at least two, maybe I'll be able to do three. First one's my stepdad. We'll do my stepdad first. So, you know, I had started these amends with the one sponsor. I'd gone to Windsor, you know, and now I have a sponsor, this guy named Jack, and he was sober for 47 years when I met him. And Jack always used to say, you know, Joe, if you want to get 47 years, it might take 47 years, you know? And I like, you know, I have nothing for that. But what he did was, you know, he knew that in me going and kind of like reading this script for amends, you know, it's like, I'm sorry that I wronged you. You know, I did these things to you. I'm not trying to live that way today. And, you know, is there anything you want to say to me? All that is a statement of intent. All you're saying is you're going to stop, pardon my language, being an asshole. You know, the amends follows for years. And so what I'm talking about now is the long game, you know, and I'm only 15 years into this deal. So like, you know, check in with me in 5 years. But what I'm talking about now is the long game. All that initial conversation is just that, an initial conversation. And you see, what my sponsor knew, because he'd been sober for a while, is that I couldn't go to my stepdad, you know, the man who had to fire me for drinking, the man who I'd stolen, you know, $20,000 from, the man who I'd actively, you know, upset his marriage to my mother, you know, the person whose life I had wreaked havoc in for the last few years, and add to that the stuff that's just my stuff. Like, that's just, you know, here's Joe's side of the street. you know, his stuff. He had a brother who died of alcoholism. You know, I didn't know that really. Like, I didn't know how that affected him. You know, I didn't know that all the stuff I was going to do was going to trigger him or whatever you call it. You know, all I was doing was just living an active alcoholism in his house, you know? And so my sponsor said, you know, don't go with that statement of intent stuff to him. You know, he's not going to want to hear it. Just say you want to have a relationship with him. And I, you know, okay. So I went, you know, I was home for a visit, you know, I'm a year and a half sober or something like that. And I go to him and he holds up his hand and he says, if this has anything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't want to hear it. You know, I know that you talked to your mother and you read the script. That's all very well and good for you, but you know, thank you. And I, you know, because of good sponsorship, knew to say, Marty, I just want to have a relationship with you. How can we do that? So that was, you know, about a year and a half. In 3 to 5 year range, his daughter got sober in AA, then his granddaughter, you know. I learned from my mother later that because of his work, you know, he was always, people who had been fired for drinking were appearing before him. And he was, you know, an arbitrator. He was going to decide whether or not they get their job back. And he'd ask them, you know, are you going to Alcoholics Anonymous? And, you know, like this is like your terror if you're ever facing someone like this. You know, and then he'd ask, well, how many meetings are you going to a week? You know, who's your sponsor? How often do you talk to your sponsor? You know, you're working the steps. What's the first step? Like, do you remember it? You know, say it to me. Like this would be my nightmare, you know? I had no idea that he was watching. You know, I had no idea that when I would bring guys over and we'd be reading the big book in the backyard and like, you know, awkwardly trying not to upset him, you know, that he was watching us and that he was making note of all that stuff. You know, I couldn't know. I couldn't have planned, you know, the kind of long game, which is a God thing. It's not a me thing. And so, you know, the other part of this amends that I've kind of skirted over here is the serious financial part, you know, because at this point, like I have an entitlement the size of this room, you know. And my parents are paying for all my stuff. They're paying for me to go to university. And I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to pay you back, you know? And they're like, how are you going to pay us back with our own money? You know, like, see, the thing about amends is I have to do this so I can get free of this stuff. You know, I have to do this so I can destroy my entitlement. You know, if I don't pay back that money, what happened? I got a credit card and now I'm stealing money from them in sobriety to pay off my damn credit card bills. You know, it's really easy, you know, morally to just be like, oh, I'm such a good person. You know, I was a terrible person when I was drinking, but now I'm Lily White. That was not the case. You know, I didn't make those amends and I made it worse, you know, not better. And so about 10 years sober, I've gone back to university, you know, I've got a master's degree. I'm working in a little job. I'm up to my eyeballs in debt. Like we're talking, you know, $50,000 in debt or more. And I'm working a little job and I'm living at home with my parents, you know, and I'm in my late 20s and I'm paying down that debt and I'm paying them back slowly. And my stepdad gets terminal cancer, you know? And like, I'm not here to talk about cancer. Like cancer is a tragedy, you know, there's nothing, you know, to that or spiritual, that's just life. But, you know, I continued doing things, you know, I was sponsoring more guys than I'd ever sponsored. I was going to more meetings than I'd ever gone to. I was getting more talks, you know, doing more service. I was on the finance committee, you know, eventually I had paid and made some of those financial amends to the point where I was working in the financial industry and they asked me to be on the finance committee for AA in Toronto. I mean, you know, who thought that was a good idea? And, you know, I get a call one day and it's my lunch break at work. And, you know, I get told, like, you know, come up to the hospital. And, you know, I'm there and I'm in the room with my stepdad and, you know, everyone had been there and everyone has more of a right to be there than I do, you know. And, you know, my stepbrother, my stepsister, my own sister, my mother, you know, everyone has more of a right to be there than I do, you know, really, because they're close to him and they had intact relationships with my stepdad. And I'm sitting there and he says, you know, Brad, that's my stepbrother, you know, and I say, no, Marty, you have the wrong son, you know, like I'm, it's Joe. And he says, you know, take my hand. And if I had any doubt, the amends was made, you know, that's like, this is what Alcoholics Anonymous does in my life. You know, I just get to show up in a way that I don't quite understand and don't quite know how to do. I just say yes and show up. And suddenly things start to take shape, you know. And see, the thing is, like, I didn't realize this early on. You know, I'll talk about quickly, like, a second amends. You know, my grandmother, you know, this is really, like, and this is for all of you. If you're new, like, if you're in your first few years of sobriety, which I guess is still new, I spent that time, you know, I was running up credit cards. I was doing crazy things. And I didn't really know what to do with sobriety yet. Like, I was doing all the stuff. You know, I had a sponsor, working the steps, going to meetings, but I didn't really get it yet, you know. And I'm in another hospital room, you know, and this time, like, the most spiritual lady in my life, my Nana, you know, she's dying down the hall. She's had a heart attack. And it just so happened that, you know, again, everyone is there and suddenly I'm the only one in the room and I'm there alone with her. And this is what she says, you know, this will give you, like, this is my model for spirituality. You know, this is what she gave me in that time, you know. I'm there. I'm upset. You know, I'm spending all my time on my phone. I'm checked out. You know, I just can't deal with grief. I don't do well with grief. And I'm there talking to her and it's just us. And she says, Joey, keep doing what you're doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's so many young men you might help. You know, that's it. Pretty simple. You know, there, dying, not wanting me to console her or, you know, not wanting to console me, just reminding me that there are so many young men I might help, you know, stay sharp. You know, I had stolen some money from her. I got to pay it back. You know, I'd spent a lot of time with her, you know, right up until the end there. That's why I was there at the hospital at the end. And I got to hear that message loud and clear. You know, it's like suddenly, like, the penny just dropped. You know, I was 4 years sober at the time. There are so many, you know, young men you might help. And I try to take that up. Like, if you get anything out of my, you know, my talk today, it's this, that if you do this, you know, the only thing that I found after years of being here is that I have a sense of usefulness. You know, that's it. I get to be of use in a way that I wasn't, you know, and what I get is I get to grow in usefulness. Third amends. And I'm doing okay for time. So that guy, you know, that guy, his name's Mike, you know, that guy that I got the gun to chase down, you know, there was a night I did chase him down and, you know, and his mother called the cops on us and, you know, it was a bad scene and he kind of got away in a taxi and I was convinced, you know, I was going to get him. And then I got a letter when I was at Al school, you know, and it was from one of my friends and it was kind of coded, but it seemed like they had got, you know, cornered him somewhere, kicked the crap out of him. And at the time, just to give you an idea of how sick I was, I delighted in that news, you know? And so, you know, I owe an amends to Mike. And the amends, you know, was as simple as, even though I was terrified to make it because this is the enemy, you know, version of the amends, but sometimes, you know, it behooves us. It is to our benefit to go to an enemy rather than to a friend. You know, the amends I owe to Mike is, if those things hadn't transpired in exactly that way, I would not be here talking to you this evening. I would not be sober. This would not be what was going on my Sunday evening. And so, like, at the very least, I owe Mike a thank you, you know? And it, you know, it took me some time to do that. I was living in other cities, you know, but eventually, like, around 2 years, I was willing. I couldn't track him down. 3 years willing, can't track him down. You know, I get, you know, back to Toronto and I'm about 6-7 years sober and I'm working a little job. I'm a landscaper. You know, I work for a property management company. I'm out there mowing the lawn and I'm mowing Mike's lawn. You know, Mike's just over here watching me mow his lawn. And I'm like, well, you know, this is a pretty good sign. I got to make this amends, you know. And so I go, you know, to knock on his door because I'm the property manager. I know what unit Mike lives in. And I, you know, I hear, like, these were, you know, triplexes. So you kind of had to go upstairs to get to where the main area of the house was. And I hear somebody come down the stairs, get on the other side of that door, look through people. And he wouldn't open up the door. You know, he was probably terrified that I was going to do something to him after, you know, 7 years. And my sponsor said I had to stop harassing him. So I left it there, you know, and, you know, years went by, you know, I reached out. Facebook is great for this. You know, if any of you, if you have, you know, amends and you've lost touch with that person, you'll get on Facebook and put that sucker in there. But, you know, really, like, I hadn't seen him, you know, and I was at this point, I'm living in 10 different places, you know, as was said at the start before the meeting, you know, yes, I'm a high school dropout. And yes, I'm currently completing my doctorate at the University of Ottawa, where I'm also a professor. But, you know, I got married, I left town, I was living up the Arctic, and I found I'm back in Ontario now for work. I'm in Toronto, in my home city, and I'm taking 13 years at my original home group. You know, this was only 2 years ago. And I took that coin and I got that cake. It just didn't feel right. You know, sure, I do all the stuff that I've been doing and it's great. And, you know, some people said nice things about me, and I always hate birthday meetings that are like that, you know, just keep it like the meeting. But I got out of that birthday meeting and I was thinking to myself, you know, this just doesn't feel right for some reason. And, you know, I reached out to Mike, you know, because he had just added me on Facebook, you know, earlier that week. And I said, you know, hey, like, would you be willing to meet with me? And suddenly, you know, the day after my 13-year birthday, I'm sitting at a pasta dinner across from Mike, you know, like, this is the guy, you know, this is the guy. And I'm seeing him just shovel linguine like into his mouth, you know. And you see, what I don't know, what I get from amends is this stuff, right? Like the other stuff, like the shift in perspective that I'm just not capable of doing for myself. And you see, Mike has been carrying around this guilt for years. And you see, I've been living the past 13 years at this point free from all of that stuff, you know, because I got a sponsor and I started to make amends and I've been doing the deal. And so largely I feel free, you know, occasionally a little off kilter, but we have like a way to deal with off kilter. Mike, on the other hand, has been, you know, in guilt for a while, and he can't believe, you know, the things that he did to me and the things that he did to others, and it's still there. And you know, I get to make amends. You know, I get to say, least of all, after all the other stuff, you know, thank you. I have a pretty great life today. My sponsor likes to remind me of that. You know, whatever I'm complaining, you know, this, that, the other thing, you know, he reminds me. The guys I sponsor and a lot of other guys would trade a lot of things to get where I'm at. And I just, you know, I need to remember to be grateful. And it's doing things like this. You know, today, Mike is in my life. You know, Mike is my friend. He just helped. He's a realtor now. He helped two of my friends buy a house 2 weeks ago. You know, see, what Alcoholics Anonymous does in this program is it repairs, right? And it repairs in such a way that I can be of use if I just get out of the way, you know. I had no concept of this. You know, amends is not a short game. That's just statement of intent. You know, what I get over living differently from a period of time is just an ever-widening, ever-increasing perspective on this deal where I get bit by bit to be grateful. So, I mean, where am I at today? You know, I remember telling Butch from Ontario, you might have heard Butch, you know, speak before. You probably, I know you've had him down to your pockets conference. Somebody, when I was in Virginia, gave me Butch's CD and said, hey, this guy's Canadian. You should hear him, you know, and this happens all the time. People are like, oh, this guy's Canadian. Do you know him? And I'm like, Canada's a big country. You know, yes, I know him, but that's besides the point. Yes, I know Butch. You know, Butch is a good friend of mine, and he's helped me a lot over the years. And we were at the World Conference in 2015. And for whatever reason, like, I know some of you were probably at the World in Atlanta, and I didn't see any of you. You know, I just seemed to see people from Canada and specifically people from Toronto when I was at the World. But, you know, I'm there. I have my wife with me. You know, we weren't even engaged then, you know, we've been married almost 3 years now. And she's having a meltdown, you know, because there's no food. Like, Atlanta wasn't ready for 200,000 alcoholics to just descend on the city. You know, we're there right in front of the dome. We're late to the meeting, and Steph is just, you know, she's melting down for a variety of things. And Butch comes out of nowhere and he just says, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, and he gives Steph a hug and then he walks off, you know, and about a year after that, you know, maybe not even a year, like, it was March, we were there in July, I see Butch speak at another meeting in Ontario. And, like, bear in mind, like, I don't make decisions, you know, Steph and I are not engaged, you know, nothing. And Butch just says to me, Joe, how's that wife of yours? And I don't have the heart to tell him, you know, that we're not married. You know, I don't have the heart to tell him, you know, it's like, we're not even engaged. But I get this idea, I'm like, well, you know, maybe, I mean, what's stopping me? So about a month later, you know, I'm, you know, speaking at Butch's group down in Barrie. And, you know, I get to roast him, you know, tell that story about Steph having a meltdown and how he diffused the whole situation, and how, you know, days before the meeting, I had asked Steph to marry me. And, you know, she said yes. And here I am now speaking at your group. That's my only news. You know, I don't get to plan how this thing goes. You know, I just get to stay here and get little glimpses of inspiration, but it's pretty nice. You know, it's pretty nice. It's nice to be here. It's a pleasure to be speaking in Virginia. I hope, you know, my Canadian accent isn't coming out, you know, too hard here, but it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me as your speaker.